Rupa Goswami was a direct disciple of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he learned the science of devotional service from him. And he was empowered by Lord Chaitanya to write about the process of devotional service in the same way as it's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Teni Brahma Hridaye Adikave Muhyanti Yatsurayaha, that Lord Brahma in the beginning of creation was inspired by Lord Krishna from within the heart to speak about transcendental subject matters. And this is where the disciplic succession begins, from Krishna's in speaking to Brahma from within the heart, Teni Brahma Hridaye. So in the same way, Rupa Goswami, as a disciple of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahi Anya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a combination of Radha and Krishna. There are many esoteric reasons for his appearance in that form, which is we'll go into in another class. However, suffice it to say that all the great acharyas and the shastras point to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's divinity. And anyone who applies their logic and discretion to studying the life of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the shastras, which illuminates his divinity, will become fully convinced. Siddhanta bolya chita na kara alash. One should not be lazy about this, says Kaviraj Goswami, who wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Siddhanta bolya chita na kara alash. Alash means lazy, right? In Bengali? Yes. So one should not be alash. One should not be lazy about understanding Siddhanta. Siddhanta means understanding what something is and also what it isn't. The more clearly we understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then the more, Kaviraj Goswami says, enthusiastic we will be to render service. And Krishna says much the same in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that one who knows the power and glory that of me, that I create the whole world, everything emanates from me, such a person engages in my service. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajanti imam buddha bhava samanvita. Someone who knows that Krishna is the source of everything turns their attention towards serving Krishna. Once Prabhupada said that the only difficulty is knowing that the only difficulty we face is in not knowing that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Rupa Goswami was a disciple of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu mentioned that he had empowered Rupa Goswami from within the heart to write about the Vaishnav philosophy, the Gaudiya Vaishnav philosophy, also Sanatana Goswami. And Rupa Goswami has written many, many books which explain the method of devotional service to serve Krishna, so as Sanatana Goswami, and he had written many plays also, which describe the activities in the spiritual world, so that we can have an understanding of what goes on in the spiritual world. Because many people are confused about this, and rightly so. Because, Oma Gyanati Miranasya, we are born into darkness. And Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, Narupa Masyeha Tatopa Labhyate Nanto Nachadir Nachasam Pratishtam. We're in a banyan tree, we can't see its form, we don't know where the end is or the beginning, and we're simply overcome with living in the banyan tree, going from one branch to the next, trying to taste the fruits. And therefore, to come to knowledge of the spiritual world, one has to hear from a higher source. In other words, that knowledge has to come down to me, and it's not something that I can reach up and catch with my intelligence or figure out. Through some kind of scientific study, the banyan tree is too vast. Therefore, I have to receive this shruti praman, which means evidence coming from the spiritual world. Just like if I want to know what's going on in Chicago right now, I'd get on a Skype call, maybe, and I'd call some friend on Lunt Street at the temple, and I'd say, "What's the weather? What's going on in Chicago?" And they would tell me what the situation is, and then, although I'm not there, I would have a valid authority who would tell me. So similarly, the shruti is the evidence which is being passed down from the spiritual world, spiritual sound, describing what is the nature of the absolute truth, what is the nature of the spiritual world. And all this gets revealed in this world through the hearts of enlightened souls. In other words, the knowledge may be there, but also the realization of that knowledge must also be complete within the heart of devotees, and therefore it's passed down from one devotee to the next and revealed to the world in that way. So Rupa Goswami was such an empowered person, and he wrote a book called the Upadeshamrita. This is the nectar. Amrita is the nectar of advice, the nectar of instruction, Upadesh. He's going to instruct us, and he's giving the nectar of all those instructions. So this is a very important book that has instructions step by step how to advance in the process of bhakti. And in the first verse, we hear about the importance of controlling the senses, that one must become a Goswami. The senses, go means senses, and Swami means master. So one must be the master of one's senses. And there are many pushings. The senses push from every different angle, seeing, smelling, touching, hearing. Every sense wants to go in a different direction. Prahlad Maharaj said it's like a person having many wives, and each one is asking for something, pulling in a different direction. That was his description. And so, Vacho Vegam, Manasakrodha Vegam, Jihwa Vegam, Udarapasta Vegam, Etan Vegam, Yovishaheta Dhira, Sarvamapimam Prithivim Sashishyat. He says one must control the all the senses. Means Vacho Vegam is the first sense, the sense where I want to speak and just say anything. The tongue will say anything at any time. And impelled by anger or envy or something like that, the words that come out of my mouth can be injurious to others, actually. The matsara, or envy, resides within the heart of all beings who are conditioned in the material world. And when it comes out through the tongue, it can act like a spear and enter into the heart of another and actually do great harm, injury. So the speaking power can get us in a lot of trouble. Also, if we say something that's untrue, then we have to cover up for that, sometimes for the rest of our life, by speaking an untruth. It's much easier to speak the truth, then you don't have anything to cover up for later on. You don't have to wonder what you said before, because you always tell the truth, and so on. So there's great power just in our speech. Ever heard the expression, my word is my bond, right? As some people, like yesterday on the street, some people said, okay, I'll be right back. And some people came back and other people didn't. I'm sure they had an excuse why they didn't come back. But, you know, one person told me, his name was Ruben. He said, I promise you, I'll be right back. And he came back. and I could see the power of his speech. He had said it and he came back. So speaking is very powerful. It molds who we are in our life by what comes out of our mouth. Krishna says in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that you can tell a person by how he or she speaks, right? Because a fool is not discovered until he or she speaks. You can remain silent and everyone will think, oh, very, very good. There's a story about a Muslim mullah. And the mullahs, they go around and they give these katas. And the mullah has this long white beard. And so he was speaking in one village for several days, and the village people would come and listen. And there was one young woman in the audience who would cry and cry and cry during his talk. And after the kata was finished, after the third day, everyone was discussing, and the mullah was impressed with this young woman and said, so please tell me, what was it about my speaking and the kata that I told today that was so moving to you? He said, no, not exactly that. He said, well, what is it? He said, well, you know, we had a billy goat in our family, and recently he passed away. And he had a long white beard just like yours. And so when you're speaking and your beard would wag like this, I would remember our billy goat, and then I would cry and cry out of separation. And the mullah was so disappointed to find out that she had not listened to a word he had said. So we don't know, and speech is indicative of who we are. So there's Vacho Vegam, Manasakrodha Vegam. The mind is a powerful force. according to Krishna in the Bhagavatam, the mind has fearsome godlike powers and is for no other reason that we've stayed in the material world other than the oppression of the mind that has kept us here. And Krishna explains the power of the mind, that accumulation of images that we have in our mind, the impressions, yang vapi smaran bhavam tajayante kalevaram tam tam evaiti konteya sudatad bhava bhavita, that carries us to the next body. Actually, it's so the force of the impressions that we carry within our mind carries us from one body to the next. So the impulses of the mind are very difficult to overcome, and great yogis try to control the mind. Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiha, the tongue itself is tasting, and Narottam Das Thakur writes that the living entities are migrating in this material world, eating all kinds of horrible things. In India, people eat this preparation called fugu. And fugu is a poisonous fish. It's a blowfish. And there are people who are specially certified to cook this fugu, because if you cook it wrong, then the person will die. And every once in a while you read in the paper that somebody died of fugu poisoning. But still everyone goes to the restaurant to eat fugu, because the tongue is so uncontrollable. A fish, they'll see the hook, they'll see the bait, and they'll try anyway. And they get hooked on that bait, and they get carried away. So the tongue is the greatest enemy when it's uncontrolled. Jiva vegam, udara pasta vegam, and then there's the belly is always asking for more. And if you fast one day, you'll find that the belly speaks to you. You ever fast? By around time for breakfast, it says, teke, breakfast, and you say, not breakfast. It's not time for breakfast, because we're not having breakfast today. And the stomach will say, what is this nonsense? I'm the king, I eat, you give me, now. And we say, no, it's Krishna's appearance day, I don't eat. And then maybe you can go by, but then when lunchtime comes, it begins speaking again. Now, feed me. And we don't know until actually we perform some tapasya, that we try to restrain the senses, that we hear how loud they're talking, and we realize how much they rule our lives. Udarapasta vegam. And then, of course, the power of the genital. Even the elephant is captured, the big strong elephant. They make a big pit. And who they? The elephant catchers. They make a big pit, and then they have a female elephant parading around on the other side of the pit that's covered over, and the male elephant gets so bewildered that he runs to catch up with the female elephant, falls in the pit, and the big strong elephant is captured. So in this way, Shastra says that everyone's captured by this attraction, which is forced by the genital. So all the different senses are very difficult to control in their pulling it. So the first goal of yoga is one must regulate the senses. And one must become a Goswami. One has to control the senses. This is a kind of attitude in life, that I'm a hero when I control the senses. The opposite attitude is that I'm a hero when I let the senses roam and do whatever they want. Those are the two kinds of heroes in this world. And many people are admired because their senses are so uncontrolled, and therefore people worship them. There are many kinds of musicians and poets and people around the world that are admired because they are wanton in their habits. They do whatever they like, they do whatever they please. Of course, they pay the consequence. They take a lower birth in their next life, and they suffer in this life. But the attitude of the devotee, particular attitude, is that I must be Goswami. And that this is the real hero. And I develop this self-esteem when I discipline my senses. A little bit of discipline means I can develop self-esteem. I realize that these urges, when I tolerate them, they're temporary. They go away. Urges say, I'll be here forever. You give in. And when I say, no, I won't give in, then eventually they go away. And then I feel empowered to do more. So every discipline leads to more disciplined action, and one gradually, step by step, can become a Goswami. So we must do this, Rupa Goswami says. And then Rupa Goswami tells six things that degrade our devotional service, and six things that improve our devotional service in all circumstances. And those things he mentions, I'll say briefly. He says, Atyahara prayashascha prajalpo niyamagraha janashangas chaloyam cha shadbir bhakti vinashiti. Six things that destroy devotional service has to do with, starting with over-collecting. Nowadays, you don't have to just have a house, but you have to have a house and storage, extra storage. Isn't it? Because you not only you keep enough stuff in the house, and if you don't curb this, I notice when I'm traveling that I have to very carefully restrict what I bring with me. Because one extra thing, and then I'm over what I can actually fit in my little bag. And it's a constant struggle, because more things are always coming in, and you have to winnow them out. Otherwise, by nature, you just over-collect. And if you live in a house for some years, everyone gives you things, you buy things, it fills up, next thing you know, we need a storage locker. And all these things, they amount to visual noise. You have them all over your house, and they're constantly calling to you, distracting your attention, and they become a great burden. So over-collecting, taking more things than we need, collecting more money than you actually need and not depending on Krishna and so on. Atyahara, prayashascha. I won't go into all of them. We can all study these things. They're just samples. And then the next verse tells the things that empower us and help us to go up in devotional service. Utsahan nischaya dharayat tat tat karma pravartana sangat tyagat suto rete shadbir bhakti prasidyati. What improves your devotional service? It starts with enthusiasm. This word enthusiasm means the God within, because en means in and enthusiasm means theos, it means God. So God's in your heart and you become empowered from within. You have a natural impetus to move. And then there's patience, tolerance. These things are all mentioned within this, the six that are to improve our devotional service. And then we come to a very interesting shloka, which says, number four, the dati prati grinati kuyam akyati prichiti bhunkte bojayate chaivat shadvidim prati lakshanam. And this means that there are six exchanges of love between one devotee and another. And these exchanges are to give gifts and accept gifts. To reveal one's mind in confidence and hear another reveal their mind in confidence. And to give prasadam and to accept prasadam. And so we're just going to talk for about 5 minutes about that verse. That was a preface for the... Well, one thing is, guya maketi prichiti. It's extremely important in our development of love of God, in our Krishna consciousness, to have this open communication among devotees. To reveal one's heart in confidence, and to listen to others in confidence. And this kind of communication can solve all kinds of problems in our life. Because generally, everyone makes assumptions. We assume what other people are thinking. That's one thing that causes us a lot of problems. Like, example, someone sees their friend at a mall, and they're coming out of a doorway, and they look them in the eye, and their friend turns around and walks away. And then the person begins to think, my friend hates me. I wonder why he hates me. Well, actually, I hate him too. And forget him. And then all week long, he's thinking, well, why does he hate me? And I could think of a million reasons why I hate him, and so on. And then he meets him a week later at someone's house. And he said, all right, this is it. Out with it. Why do you hate me? I know you hate me anyway, and I hate you too, but I want to just hear why. Why you hate me so much? And then he said, what are you talking about? We're best friends. And he said, I saw you at the mall. I looked you in the eye. You looked me in the eye. And you walked away. So I know you hate me. And he said, no, you don't understand. I was at the eye doctor. And they put drops in my eyes. I couldn't see a thing. I was blind. Someone had to pick me up to go home. And, oh, sorry. Because of this... jumping to conclusions, this kind of assumption. And in devotee society, it's very important that we learn this intimate communication, to not assume things among devotees, to not hold grudges, to open our hearts and to openly communicate with when you have a spouse, and I have a perfectly nice spouse. we've learned over the years something very important. It's a talk, haven't we? Yeah. So you can say something about it. Sure, why not?
I guess communication is an important part of being married. It's an important part of friendships, even acquaintances in devotional life. And learning how to speak one's heart and mind in a way that is... as they say, nonviolent communication is very beneficial in our relationships and so thus in our devotional service. So there's also the advice of not taking things personally, because a lot of times when things are said or done, they're not meant personally to you. It's what's going on with the other person more than what then it's about you. So that's also a big help in relationships, not taking things personally. But the communication is of the utmost importance. And I think another one of the words you mentioned is in confidence. That when someone, it's an honor when someone opens their heart and reveals their heart to you. And, you know, that should be taken in confidence. It shouldn't be taken lightly. It shouldn't be something that you feel like you now have something on them, or, you know, something you can use, something you can talk about frivolously with someone else. It's a great honor that's been bestowed upon you when someone reveals their heart, whether it's, you know, a difficulty they're having, or you know, something they're joyful about, but they don't want the news spread around. If it's in confidence, that's a serious responsibility, and to not be judgmental during these times. You know, when someone is revealing their heart and mind to you, to just be a good listener. Being a good listener is an important aspect of communication, because often while the other person is talking, we're thinking what we're going to say back to them. We're not even really hearing what they have to say. And sometimes that's all we need. All we need sometimes is to have someone hear us. We don't need advice. We don't need their opinion. I mean, of course, that's also a value. But sometimes all we need is just someone who we can, in a popular term, vent to. You know, someone who's trusted that we can vent to. And I know, you know, over the years, there's always going to be ups and downs in marriages and friendships and society. There's always going to be hard times. But these friendships that we can develop with each other, they are what will get us through these hard times. You know, I know over the years I've depended on my God sisters, my good friends, my husband, for many times that, you know, where I need guidance, where I need acceptance, where I need to just reveal my heart. And it's... I truly value those relationships. They're the richest part of my devotional service, quite honestly. Without my my friendships, I don't know where I'd be in Krishna consciousness. I owe a lot to anyone who's been kind enough to open their heart to me. And I would hope that all of you have that in your lives. And if you don't have it, then please... kindle that, you know, fan that spark. It's important. We're souls. We want to connect, as my husband was saying, you know, even out on Sankirtan. The soul wants to connect with other souls. And that's what we're talking about here, connecting soul to soul.
Nice points. I was thinking also about the importance of being yourself. And in the material world, due to false ego, I'm always trying to present my false self. I want to embellish who I am, because when I'm affected by the bodily concept of life, the problem is that the body's never good enough. It's something that I have to embellish. I mean, in fact, you know, when people make magazines and they put a picture of a model there, they always airbrush it, you know, to make sure that they look perfect. And I'm always airbrushing my personality, or, you know, the way I look or whatever, to present myself as something that I'm not really, or that I want to be. However, someone who's in the mode of goodness or transcendent and is not in the bodily conception of life becomes satisfied with who he or she is, because we are good enough, just as souls. And this is an aspect of Guhya Makheti Prichyati, of actually just being myself. We were talking earlier that it's a real relief just to be yourself. You don't have to be anything extra to anybody else. You just have to be who you are. And if you realize, I'm a soul, I'm part and parcel of Krishna, I'm maintained by Krishna, that and you just be yourself in that spiritual identity, then you're satisfied. And there's a very difficult thing to do, and you can realize it more when you're trying to reveal your mind to somebody who's close to you. How much can you actually reveal before there's a governor inside you that says, don't tell them that, because what would that do to, you know, your reputation? What are they going to think of you? But Krishna already knows everything about you. This is a kind of aspect of clarity, that if I realize that Krishna already knows all my secrets, he already knows everything about me, you know, what's it going to hurt if I reveal them to my intimate friends and such? It's kind of illusion to think that I can hide something. So guhyam means you know, in confidence, and it also means confidentially opening my heart to who I really am. And the point is that learning this kind of communication and developing these close kinds of friendship is a precursor to actually chanting the holy names very deeply and associating with Krishna in a meaningful way. And that's why Rupa Goswami has placed some of these instructions before he even talks about chanting the holy name, which comes, actually, the next verse after this is about how to associate with devotees. And the verse after that is about how to see devotees, advanced devotees, that you shouldn't consider the material side, you should see what is the essential heart of the devotee, that they're actually pure, their full life is dedicated to Krishna consciousness. And so what if they wear glasses or something like that? I mean, they don't have perfect senses? That's not what perfect senses means. Perfect senses means that someone is fully following the disciplic succession and accepts the conclusion of the Shastra and presents that. That overcomes the four defects of the senses if someone is strictly following that process. Then, after all those instructions, Rupa Goswami talks about chanting the holy name of the Lord, Sat Krishna Nama Charitari Sitapta Vidya. And he says that in a diseased condition, we have to go on chanting until we feel the medicinal effect. So, cultivating this kind of friendship and a way in which we can reveal our heart is very purifying. And it's recommended by Rupa Goswami, the empowered devotee and disciple of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it's something to study and look into and add into your life so that you can progress quickly in devotional service. Any questions or reflections?
Prabhu, when you are saying that reveal in confidence and hear in confidence, if someone wants to develop a relationship, what would be the best Krishna conscious method to develop friendship between two people?
Well, develop friendship with anybody is just meet them, get to know them. Rupa Goswami says, you know, have some exchange. Prabhupada describes just like business people, they go off, when they get to know each other, you know, they go out for lunch. And they share some of their strategies and thoughts. And it becomes a natural, you know, aspect of their life when they come together like that. Sharing, you know, talking, prasadam, and talking things like that. I mean, whenever I see somebody that I'd like to get to know, then I just approach them and, you know, offer my services or, you know, just introduce myself. And usually from there, you know, you can develop something and see if you can stay in touch with that person. Yeah.
Most of our deep friendships have come in an organic way by doing service with each other. Doing service is a very powerful bond. And you'll find, you know, who's like-minded. You know, not everyone, and that's not a bad thing, you know, we're all different, there's different camps in the spiritual world. But by doing service together, you develop a real bond. A lot of your old friends are devotees he's been in the trenches with, you know, out on Sankirtan. And the same with me. A lot of my friendships are started that way, with doing devotional service together.
Yes.
When we develop friendship, we need to be confident, like confidentially present ourselves. But at the same time, good friendships are also dependent upon creating boundaries. So, what are the boundaries for spiritual friendship? Like, where not to go overboard, like expecting too much, and what we actually expectation creates a lot of problems, and where the boundary has to be created.
You want to say?
I think that goes to, part of that is about being yourself. You know, being true to yourself. And having, when you're true to yourself, there's a confidence there. And then that kind of creates natural boundaries. You know, sometimes I think there'll always be sometimes where, you know, those boundaries may be crossed. You don't mean to, but it happens. You know, that's also part of a friendship. But when there's communication, then you know you can talk about it. You can talk about those boundaries. Or the space you need, or the time you need, or whatever the bound, you know, whatever it is you need to feel comfortable in the friendship.
Also, it's mentioned there are etiquettes in any society, and those etiquettes are sort of well established boundaries in order to give us a buffer zone. As I mentioned in the next verse in the Upadeshamrita, there is a description of how we can interact with different levels of devotees. And these sorts of things are there in many different kinds of society. When I was in Japan, well, in Japan you'll notice that there are a lot of different ways that people interact according to their status and such. And in Vaishnav culture we have these things also. They shouldn't be just taken as rote. But we should realize why they're there. And those also help to understand how to approach different kinds of devotees. And those are built-in boundaries. How to show respect and at the same time develop friendship, which is important. Lakshmi, you have a point? Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Challenges to that is, you know, the bar that
that, you know, that we have as devotees is so high, and we always find ourselves falling short of that high standard. And so there is always a sense of discomfort within. It's like, you know, you always know that you're not good enough. Like, when you're as a materialistic person, you know, you may be somewhere and you know that you are someone, but in Krishna consciousness, you always know that you're not good enough, because you are, you know, even though you've done so much, but there's so much more to do. So, two parts, I guess. One is, how do you feel comfortable within yourself, knowing that you're so far away from perfection, and at the same time not allow that to become, like, you know, become complacent about who you are? And of course, the second part is,
maybe just do one part at a time, otherwise I'll get confused. Krishna says, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam Yome Bhakti Paryachiti. Very simple thing. If you just offer me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I'll accept it. And there's a very simple way that we can feel satisfied, is just be sincere. And if I'm sincere and I do some simple thing for Krishna or for anybody else, I'll feel satisfaction. There's natural satisfaction in being sincere, or even being truthful, being straightforward. The reward is automatically there. Like, for instance, if you're truthful in a situation where you have an option, you can tell the truth or not tell the truth, and you tell the truth, then immediately you feel satisfaction. You feel whole when you all of a sudden, you make a choice. It would be expedient. It would be easier to shade the truth. It would make you look better to shade the truth. But you just tell the truth, and all of a sudden you feel bigger. You have more self-esteem than you did before, and such. And I'm just saying that it's natural to feel satisfied in devotional service and in doing the right thing. It's not that, you know, that is lofty. In other words, the idea that there's I have higher to go is always there, but in the moment when I'm performing devotional service according to my capacity, there is satisfaction. And this is also recommended in the Shastra, Sway Sway Adhikarya Nishta Saguna Parikirtita. Krishna tells Uddhava in the Bhagavatam that when you act according to your Adhikari, your qualification now, that's a good quality. And viparyayostu dosha syat means that if you act according to what you think your qualification should be, but you're not qualified for it, it's a fault. And also Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, it's not very beautiful. It doesn't look good when someone tries to do more than they can do. So Shastra recommends just be yourself. Act in your according to your capacity in a simple, sincere way. And you'll feel satisfaction from doing that, and you'll also advance to the next level. And of course, advancement, true advancement, means that we realize the more we know, the more we know we don't know. Neophytes, those who begin anything, there's a phenomenon called utsamayi, which means that this early zeal, that as soon as I'm introduced, an immature student will, after the first class in English, will say, well, you know, I'm practically William Shakespeare because, you know, I learned my ABCs. And immature people, you know, who take to devotional service, and everyone's immature when they start, may have that kind of feeling that I, you know, I have to be something else. I have to be somewhere else. And I'm greater than I am, maybe. That's another aspect to it. But if we simply take the mercy that's given to us and the ability that we have right now and act, then we'll feel satisfied. We can feel satisfied in that. And the question always is, how do I make advancement? And the answer always is by acting according to the capacity you have right now. Otherwise, it's a kind of an illusion. Is there a second part?
Yes, the second part is already answered.
Okay. All right. Then we should.
Oh, a very brief question.
Yes.
You mentioned Rupa Goswami says, "Don't judge the devotee by the external characteristics, especially the spiritual master." And you said that imperfect senses mean having perfect senses doesn't mean that one has 20/20 physical vision, but that one follows strictly the conclusions of the disciplic succession and the Vedic literatures. Does the same thing also apply then to when we say that an imperfect soul has a tendency to make mistakes? That not making mistakes doesn't mean that one always knows exactly what time it is down to the minute, but that one always follows the succession and accepts the conclusion of the Vedas.
Yes, because there may be a process to come to understand, to clarify. And then it doesn't mean, perfect succession doesn't mean that you're clairvoyant. It doesn't mean that you see everything at all times and all place circumstances, but it means that when you, in dealing with any issue or solving any problem, you use the guru, sadhu, and shastra.
And making mistakes also, same criteria?
Yes.
So, okay.